Welcome to another episode of the Experts in Polo Shirts podcast with me, Chris Piggott, Stevie, and we're joined today by Andy Sefton, Head of IT and Security at Centrepoint. And this is part of our IT Leaders series.
Did you just make up a new series then? I like that.
Make up as I go along. It's fine. Yep.
How long is this podcast?
So, yeah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
We're joined by Andy Sefton, who's Head of IT and Data Security at Centrepoint. And I think it'd be pretty useful for Andy to give us a bit of a sort of background on where he got into IT, where it started, and kind of what, you know, what his role entails at Centrepoint.
I first started in IT in 1986. Which is a long time ago. In fact, there weren't many that many computers around.
Did they have computers back then?
I was talking about this yesterday to one of my friends who I hadn't seen for many years. I actually said, the time I started, I was working in a government department, and the team I was working with was called Office Machinery. Wow. And actually, one of the first jobs we did was remove electric typewriters and replace them with computers.
That's cool. So
that's really, like, you know, the cutting edge of moving forward for governments. So that's as far back as I go, which was, as I say, 1986. I originally started working in Health and Safety Executive in Liverpool. And, it was an interesting time. It was, you know, that sort of first curve of technology. I did first line and second line IT support. That's how you earned your stripes in IT at the time. You had to go through help desk first, and that was great. I mean, it was an amazing time, and I actually did that for within the civil service for about 9 years. Went through quite a number of roles, and ended up working in the consultancy side, but as a civil servant, doing consultancy for the government department I was working for, which was actually about sort of emerging technology and integrating that into the civil service, into the government department, and matching that to the business need that department had at the time. So that was interesting. I was given the grand title of Head of Emerging Technologies and Testbed Manager.
That's quite a cool title.
Yeah.
When was that?
That would probably be round about 1995.
You'd be like Chief Evangelist now, if that would be like you. That'd
yeah, I don't know what they call it now. that's what we did. And this was during a time when people were starting to outsource IT.
Yeah.
And eventually that outsourcing caught up with the civil service, and I ended up working for a consultancy rather than being directly employed as a civil servant. And I did that until about 1998, working in the same consultancy team, but obviously as a contractor then. Around about the end of 98, it was time to move on and do something a little bit different. And I actually ended up working for a company called Admiral Computing as an integration specialist, systems integration, networks and platforms.
It's a great job title.
Look,
it's like I make these job titles up.
Are you sure you're not?
And some people have said that I definitely make the job title up. I did that for until the first half of the noughties, so till about 2005, I was working there on lots and lots of different projects for lots and lots of different organisations, some of which were government. It was quite nice for that business for me to have been a civil servant and have security clearance. So I was working on quite a lot of projects for different government departments, nothing too secret. And, you know, I'm not trying to make out that it was,
James Bond
or anything, but a few good IT infrastructure projects that I worked on. Admiral Computing would then merge with a Dutch company called CMG, which is quite a large consultancy. So I moved over and worked for CMG, again, mainly on the consultancy side, working at client sites. And I was just saying to Chris before, around about the early 2000s, I started working on something that we called Managed I, which was Managed Infrastructure, which was probably the precursor to cloud, really. We were, if you like, application hoteling. I like that term. You can have that one.
Thanks. Thanks.
So we were taking applications from business and coming up with technical solutions and hosting those in our own data center, which eventually got so big that we actually went into real proper sort of third-party data centers. And that was an interesting time. I then moved on from there. I did a bit of backpacking and a bit of travel.
Where did you go?
Oh, I did two round the world trips, pretty much back to back. Yeah.
Well, like completely, like literally country hopping all the way around.
Yes, country hopping. I got back to the UK actually got back to the UK the day before 9/11.
Oh,
and
wow.
So it was a bit weird kind of waking up with jet lag and going, what's this happening? And then soon after that, I went backpacking again another year. But yeah, a lot of countries in over the 2 year period.
So what's your favorite? Have you been back to any of them on the basis that you liked them the first time round?
Well, my favorite country of them all, and the one that I thought I could live, and my favorite city would probably be Rio de Janeiro. However, I can't speak a word of Portuguese. So, I mean, I could barely get by with basic travel Spanish. If they spoke Spanish, I'd probably be living there.
Yeah.
But that's probably my favourite country, my favourite city that I've ever been to. It's got an element of danger glamour and everything at the same time.
So the danger appeals, does it then?
It's not so much the danger.
Or the glamour.
It's the unpredictability.
Okay, so it's the unpredictability.
Excitement. So that was me moving on and having a little bit of a career break in the middle. I then went to work as a consultant, but I was working for a property development / merchant bank for about a year or two years, which was interesting. I was saying to Chris before, we were working on, you know, trading platforms and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Absolute real-time computing and the need to take out latency from networks. And that was an interesting challenge. And then I moved into the charity sector after that. I did 7 years at a children's charity, which I transformed from quite small to a really probably slightly just under medium-sized charity.
Yeah.
They were massive in growth, that was a good time. That was just before real cloud took off. So a lot of the servers that I was working with, a lot of the things I was doing were actually on-prem. Virtualization was just taking off. So one of the last jobs I did with that organization was to virtualize. And then Office 365 and Azure came out just after I'd left.
Yes.
I then took another career break. I did another 6 months. The travel bug hadn't disappeared. So I took 6 months and I just went around southern India for 6 months,
awesome.
Chilling out, bit of Zen, bit of yoga, not so much yoga. that was a nice little break.
So we mentioned yoga. I mean, I've always got like the best intentions with yoga, and we tried some classes here. We tried like a YouTube tutorial or something, and I quickly realized like how unfit I actually was. and how difficult yoga actually can
I've
be.
Yeah, I've just joined another yoga class because my body is seizing up.
Welcome
to IT.
My knees have gone, my neck's gone, my shoulders have gone. Yeah.
I'm just a mess.
Yeah, basically.
I need to go traveling for 6 months.
It takes its toll on you. So I did a trip around southern India for 6 months, which, you know, the previous trips I'd done were like mainly about sort of getting to see as many places as I possibly could.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, as you get older and you mature a little bit, you kind of want to spend more time and see more stuff in the same place.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It was a much more relaxed journey. And that India is actually the second place I'd probably live. So if I had my choice, I'd probably live in Rio de Janeiro for a certain time of the year and then hop over to India for the rest of the year. And this is maybe a retirement plan.
Sounds like the best life.
Yeah.
Once I came back from there, I kind of thought, probably about time I got a job somewhere. And I saw a job advert, which just said, wanted. And I thought, that's me.
Wanted for crime.
And I thought, yeah, okay. It was a 3-month contract at Centrepoint.
Is that where it started? Three months.
3 month contract. Wow. It was an emergency cover. Centrepoint had had an IT manager before, but he'd left probably over a year ago. And they were actually, you know, in a position where it was really in a bad shape from an IT point of view.
Yeah.
And they just needed somebody immediately to come in short term. I think they'd had their fingers burnt in the past with people saying they're going to do X, Y, and Z and never being able to deliver anything at all.
Yeah.
I can remember talking to my chief executive almost on like possibly the second or third day. And he said, Andy, I'm not going to give you any money. When things cost, if you want this to be the state of the art or functioning in the way you need it to function, it's going to cost you some money. He said, Andy, we've given money to you guys before. I went, you guys, you IT guys, you tech guys before, and you promised and never delivered. I said, okay, so if I can start promising and delivering, will you start giving me the money that's required to make these systems work? He went, you'll have to prove it to me first. So the first thing I did was create a plan with as much low-hanging fruit as I possibly could, because I thought there's no point in trying to...
Yeah, get the quick wins.
Yeah, get the quick wins out the way as soon as I can to prove that if you invest some money in tech, some money in me, and some money in sort of systems and processes, then we'll be able to turn around what hasn't been working, and we'll build some trust, trust in technology. And that's what I actually did. I actually planned to try and actually loosen the purse strings in some way.
And here you are now. How many years have you been at Centrepoint for?
This will be my 8th year, just coming up to my 8th anniversary at Centrepoint. And in that time, we've done quite a lot of change. The organisation has grown from, I think, possibly when I started in 2003, there was around 250 staff in total and possibly about 25 hostels that we supported young people in.
Yeah.
Fast forward to 2021, and we've now got 60 hostels, and we're now over the 600 staff mark.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's been a lot of change, a lot of growth, and the systems I've had to put in place have had to sustain that growth.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, what does Centrepoint do?
Centrepoint is a charity that takes a holistic view about young people. It's not just about providing a roof over the head. A roof over the head is, in some cases, the first thing is required. In some cases, it's not the first thing that is required. It's health, education, learning, training. Taking a young person who's homeless or at risk of being homeless and building a structure and structures in place to help that young person move on from homelessness and to be able to sustain their own themselves going forward.
Yeah. And when you mentioned, obviously, you walked into Centrepoint and kind of had to, you had to get those quick wins and show transition quickly, and you worked on a plan. I think a copy I remember you sharing with me many moons ago.
Yeah.
But what did it look like when you sort of walked through the door? What greeted you on day one?
Well, when I walked through the door, and you know what this is like, Chris, you open the door and you go, ooh, there's a fire and it needs putting out.
Close the door.
And then you open another door and you go, and there's another one, but it's not quite as bad as that one. It close that door. You open another door and you go, there's one, but it's smouldering. Close that one. Then you plan how you put all those fires out and which order you do them in.
Yeah, yeah.
For me, when I walked through the door, the systems that they were running seemed to be offline more than they were online.
Yeah.
Everything was centrally controlled through one single office, so it was a single point of failure. That's where all the servers were. That's where everything was run from. That building wasn't very good at keeping the basics, like keeping the power on.
Yeah.
Systems need power, and they need constant power, unfortunately. We haven't quite got to that stage where they don't. It wasn't very good at keeping the internet connection on either. So one of the first things I did was to plan how we would actually take away that single point of failure,
yeah,
and move to a position where systems would always be on and power would always be to those systems. And that's when we started planning on moving to a hosted environment where other people were responsible for keeping those systems online. The other things I noticed was the interconnection between our hostels and our servers. That network really wasn't fit for purpose. That was one of the major reasons and major problems of staff on our front line being unable to deliver the outcomes that are required for our young people. The systems that they were trying to access, they couldn't access. So actually, they were spending a lot of their time waiting to get access to those systems and less time with the young people themselves.
Yeah, yeah.
So one of the things I had to do was come up with a solution that actually allowed our frontline staff to spend more time with young people. And that's when I realised that I needed to replace the network at Centrepoint.
So that, would you say that sort of when you walked through that office day one, was that the biggest fire? Were there others that you managed to put out before?
They were the two biggest fires, yeah, that needed to be done. And of course, as you'll know, that they're not necessarily quick fixes.
No,
they're kind of medium-term projects that they take time.
So it's kind of foundational, I suppose, isn't it, really? That stuff is, they're the couple of really important foundations that any technology platform needs. Because if you can't get to them, it doesn't matter how good your servers are or your services, you're not going to have access.
Just for someone that doesn't know technology that well, what sort of systems are we talking about here?
We've got, at Centrepoint, we've got a reporting system. So we've almost like a case management system,
okay,
which is really important because, you know, we have a number of staff who have interventions and interactions with young people. So being able to access those systems as a key worker, you can see the progress and the interactions that have happened.
Okay.
So a little bit like, you know, we all hate this when you kind of phone up somewhere and you go, you give them all the details and then you phone back again and the next person's there doesn't know any of those details and you have to go through it all over,
yeah,
again. It could be a little bit like that if you haven't got any systems in place.
Yeah.
If the systems are failing, then what tends to happen is the staff are having to write things down. And of course, writing things down is a bit silo, and
yeah,
it also doesn't help with collaboration, mm-hmm, whatsoever. We run shift patterns, so you know, handing over from one person to the next in one of our hostels was, you know, almost impossible. And as you can see, that would impact on the outcomes for the young people. A lot of young people, not all young people at Centrepoint, do have come from a chaotic background, and one of the things that Centrepoint tries to do is put some baseline across that so that chaos disappears as best we can. We were actually creating or giving as much chaos back,
yeah,
as the young people were
Needs to be consistent, I guess, so they can move on.
Yeah, I mean, the first and foremost thought, and this is something that is instilled within Centrepoint, is how does it help young people? So for me, and Chris will remember the strategy that I put under his nose at the time.
Yeah, I remember.
It was all very much, how can technology help Centrepoint young people by helping the staff at Centrepoint and give them more time in front of young people to spend with young people? And that's what the technology strategy was in the first and foremost, the first one that I developed. That one, in terms of, sorry, going back to your question, the quick fixes, because I've gone through the medium fixes. The quick fixes were to just find ways of stabilizing the network that they had, because that was the root of the problem. And I spent a lot of time with the provider trying to just stabilize what they had. In terms of the end user devices, spent a lot of time trying to make sure that those end user devices were in a position where they were able to work on the network. And from a server point of view, spending time updating, upgrading, and transitioning between old operating systems and newer operating systems for the on-prem servers and the applications that we were running. So basically, the first couple of years at Centrepoint wasn't about replacing. It was about planning for replacement. It was actually about using what we already had, but making it work better. And that led me to be able to give me the time to develop the replacement program for the network and then the replacement program for the end user devices.
So when did you, obviously you've got a team, a team of two internal at the moment, isn't it?
I have a team of two internal staff, but I also partner with a much wider team. I kind of thought just the other day, if we were all sat in one room, what would that room look like? Clearly we wouldn't do this in the current climate, but you know, at any one time, there's probably up to about 17 people working on the technology stack within Centrepoint. That's not every day, but you know, if we all sat there and sat together, that's how many staff would actually be involved. And you know, for Centrepoint, resources are scarce. For a lot of organisations, resources are scarce. For me, we have to find best value, and I've found the best value for Centrepoint is to find technical partners, not suppliers. Suppliers you can find quite easily, but actual technical partners who care about what it is that you're trying to achieve and get on board, and that's what I've actually managed to do, I feel.
In terms of building that internal team and that right culture, what sort of steps have you taken to onboard and retain that internal team of staff?
Well, I mean, the internal team that I've got, when I first started, it was just me and one other. So I've now got me and two others. One of the team I brought in as a volunteer, and then eventually employed him. And what I've actually done with those guys is they've learned some things, probably wrong things from me, bad things. If they've got any bad habits, it's because of me. But actually, you know, I've if you like, loaned them out to the technology partners to say, you know, can you please give these guys an insight of what it is that you guys do? And as a result of that, they've learned, you know, things like cloud, things like networking, things like, you know, device configuration, and they've become more rounded IT people through those partnerships.
I think what you've built is really, it's really tricky to get it quite right, because it's balancing the culture of all the different organizations that you work with and having the right internal culture that supports all of that. And is there anything that you've done to kind of bring all those supplier relationships together? That you obviously mentioned the partnerships. What steps have you taken to make sure that you've got partnerships between your suppliers?
Well, I'm going to quote one of the other partners I work with here. It's really important that your partners play well together. And I mean, the partners that I've got working with me, do play well together, and we spend time trying to make sure that we play well together. I see that I feel like we've got like a top table team of two technical architects. Chris was one of them, and Kim from one of the other partners.
Yeah.
The technology decisions are made at that top table. I share the vision, the IT vision, the IT strategy, and we agree it between all parties before we actually move forward, to make sure that everybody is aware that, you know, it's the end-to-end availability that's important, and the technology stack that takes us there is actually, you know, something that we can choose.
Yeah.
And we work together to make sure that the technology stack is actually going to achieve the vision.
Yeah.
And we work together. And I just pull that together. So I take the flak when it goes wrong, but I also obviously, you know, make sure that I pass on the praise when it goes right.
So you mentioned that the strategy and obviously the importance of having that. How often do you communicate that to the senior management team? Is it how do you track progress of that vision?
It's strange within Centrepoint. We actually, as an organisation, do a business strategy, and we look forward for 5 years from a business strategy point of view. In this particular case, for this current organisational strategy, which is not necessarily the business strategy, we're actually looking forward to 2037. Wow. And that seems like a bit of a strange date to be looking at, 2037. But what that actually is a young person who's born today, they'll be they potentially could become a Centrepoint young person.
Oh, wow.
By 2037. And how are we going to prevent them having to come and be a Centrepoint young person?
Right.
But going back to the business strategy and the IT strategy, it's a 5-year plan. Now, a 5-year plan in technology is ambitious.
Yeah.
I think technology changes. And that's okay. We all know that technology changes, but that doesn't stop you from having a vision of where you want to be. You can adapt the technology stack to the vision.
So they're more like sort of like business objectives as opposed to technology
specific.
Yeah.
And that's the separation I've actually brought. I don't see that the challenges as technology challenges in the first instance. I see the challenges as business challenges that we need to overcome, and technology will help us overcome them.
Yeah.
So for the 5 years, I will say we will do this, that, and the other. In the first year, I'll be quite descriptive about what we're going to try and do. I might even mention some technologies that we're going to use.
Yeah.
But for the other 3, 4, or 5 years, I'm just saying we will find a way. And whilst I know that there's technology out there already that will provide the answers to that, I know that the maturity of that technology might mean it doesn't, or might mean that it really does, but we get to that stage during the course of the strategy.
So, in terms of the day to day stuff that you work on, how do you handle the upwards reporting of the, not so much on the vision and strategy side, but on the day to day, like service levels, metrics, key performance indicators? Like, what do you have in place? That what measurements?
Well, you'll know, Chris, that I've got service level agreements with you.
Yeah, I do know that. Yeah. As I am continually reminded. And luckily, whilst, never held to.
I mean, service level agreements, when you've got a partnership, are there as a safeguard, not as a something that you should be smashing over the head with.
I mean, if it often gets to that stage, the relationship is probably really poor.
It's already poor.
It sounds like you've taken a long time to really build those relationships with your suppliers. So I guess you don't get to that point.
We never get to that point.
No.
I'm quite vocal. If we're getting down to somewhere where we're approaching that, I would be quite vocal and people would be aware.
So
for me, it's not a laissez-faire approach. It's more of a sort of, I kind of trust you guys. And I know that... you are doing what I expect. I don't need to overmanage.
Yeah, from the supplier side, that relationship is so important because we rely on customers coming to us and say, well, actually, listen, we're not happy about this thing, but just calling us up and saying that this thing is an issue, can you get it sorted for us? We will. But last thing we want is something boils over and it's like, it's one of those things like it's beavering away in the back of someone's brain, and actually, you know, it boils over, but it's you've got to be upfront and not let it boil over.
Well, I like the idea of, you know, fixing something before it's broken.
Yeah.
And that keeps us keeps our systems end to end available, but also keeps the relationship open and honest.
Yeah.
You know, if there's something that needs doing, then tell me it needs doing, and we'll look at it and we'll work out when it needs doing, rather than just sort of like, you know, one of those where you kind of bury your head and sort of like, you know, hope Andy doesn't notice sort of thing.
Yeah.
Let's fix it before it breaks, because that's how IT works. That's how systems work. It's not break fix. And that's the relationship that I have with you guys at Synextra, where we try and develop in the background what we're going to do next before we actually start doing it.
Yeah, and we try to be like really transparent. Because I think a lot of IT gets a bit of a bad rep for this. Some suppliers, like whether you don't, most suppliers don't tend to tell the exact truth. And we've kind of just said, look, just tell the truth warts and all, because people, like, you know, you've got a lot of experience. You'll know when someone's pulling the wool. So just be honest, and actually, like, so we are. And that's, I think that's put us in a good place with a lot of our sort of customers. And it's been like really, I think, important to like that, developing that relationship from a supplier side to our clients.
As you know, I could sit at the same top table as you and Kim. And, you know, I've been around the block a few times. And 30 odd years of working in technology. I know when something doesn't sound or smell right. But that's obviously from a technology point of view, but, you know, from a sort of relationship point of view, it's important that stuff is just put out on the open, warts and all. If something's not going to work, then there's no point in just keep doing it. If it doesn't work, stop doing it.
No, exactly.
I think it'd be interesting to know, because you've worked in charities your last two jobs. How would that differ from other places you've worked? Like, what's the importance of IT?
I think it's important to say that for me, charities have always been enterprise level for me. So my experience of working as a consultant, I'm working in, you know, I've actually worked in all three sectors now. My experience of that is that charities, from a technology point of view, need to think of themselves as enterprise level, as medium enterprise level or large enterprise level. So that's been the important thing, is to try and bring that sort of mindset to the boardroom at charities. Technology doesn't run the business. Technology underpins the business wherever it is. Mm-hmm. And for Centrepoint, technology is just an enabler. And that's what I've found, is taking that approach with the third sector, with the charity sector, has actually been able to move those charities forward.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's breaking news.
And he's setting on a podcast.
Okay. Yeah, making news. Shut up, Andy. You're talking too much. So can we just go back to the point of the question? Sorry.
So the importance of technology and IT within charities, how that differs.
Charities have two sides to the edge. They've got the people they're supporting,
mm-hmm.
and the staff who were supporting.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's important to actually never lose sight of the people you're supporting. So technology should only be used to actually help the people you're supporting. If it doesn't help them, like I said before, stop doing it and reassess, relook at your plan. How are you actually going to make the supported people, how are you going to actually make their lives different?
Yeah.
If that is about enabling staff because it gives them more time, then you should do that. If it doesn't help, then don't do it.
Yeah.
From a technology point of view, for the last two charities, I think emerging trends have obviously been about mobility. You know, staff traditionally, and this is not a COVID thing, but staff traditionally were very much, you know, desk-based. And, you know, you would sit behind the desk and you bang at a keyboard all day and you go, that's great. That's not how people work. It's not how charities work. It's not how clients for charities actually want to be supported. People like to have time interacting. And emerging technologies has proved to me that actually removing the desk where you can and having staff be able to spend more time face-to-face in a sort of collaborative way with the client. I use clients, but it's not really, you know, it sounds a little bit business-like.
Yeah. But I guess people are really at the centre of everything you do, which it must be quite rewarding to see the stuff that you've put in place.
It is rewarding. It's rewarding, obviously, to in this case, with Centrepoint, we're looking at young people. It is rewarding to see those young people move on, move away from Centrepoint. It's great when you see, you know, you see the stories of young people getting a job, getting a home of their own, going to university, being graduating from university.
Yeah.
That's really satisfying. And you know, even though technology and the role that I have is sort of separated, you know that you were part of that journey for that university.
I think, like you say, it enables the collaboration with the staff and the people that use the service.
It is rewarding in that respect, which is why, for me, planning the technology strategy around the client, the young person in this case, is important to me, because if it's too detached, then it would lessen that satisfaction.
Yeah. So I guess adapting to COVID-19 was a big process for you and Centrepoint.
Or was it?
You know, yes, it's a big shift. A big shift for around 200 of Centrepoint staff who now are hybrid working, which they weren't before COVID. However, it was part of the strategy to actually enable staff to work in a mobile way. So
you were already ahead of it.
We were only just ahead of it.
Yeah.
We literally moved possibly a month, maybe 2 months before the final servers into the cloud. And so that was all cloud-based. We'd actually built a remote desktop Citrix environment ready for use for staff. We were anticipating perhaps, you know, a dozen, maybe 20 people before COVID working remotely or working from home. And that actually turned out almost overnight to be up to 200 staff, which was a bit of a shock.
Good test of what you'd put in
place. It was definitely a good test, and it was sort of like, you know, the best test. It's like flushing all the toilets at Wembley Stadium at the same time.
Talk about good timing. Couldn't
I know, yeah.
Have you got some inside knowledge that we don't?
No, it was a part of the technology journey that we had. And you know that, Chris, because, you know, it was part of what we talked about. The only thing that we didn't have in place really at the time was end-user devices for people to work from home and collaboration tools for people to be able to communicate with each other. We did two things on the Friday before COVID. We had a plan to roll out Microsoft Teams, and it was a six-month plan of implementation. We were going to do softly and then, you know, work out what worked and what didn't work. Well, that plan went out the window, and
you've got Teams on Monday. Yeah.
Exactly. So we actually deployed Microsoft Teams on a Friday afternoon and over the weekend, and it was available from Monday morning.
Was it? Was that very highly pressurized?
It was highly.
There was a lot of next finish.
Yes, it was. It was, and so yeah, that went out over the weekend. And on the, I did do a little bit of planning because we actually, you know, it was looking like we were going to go into lockdown one. So it wasn't something that Centrepoint hadn't scoped and planned for. I think possibly at the start of COVID and from lockdown one, things like laptops were really, really scarce. Webcams, you couldn't get them.
It was crazy.
It was crazy. You know, It was, you know, overnight laptops, laptop prices,
webcams,
like stock of webcams. They were all, there just wasn't any available. Thankfully, though, I'd ordered some laptops in anticipation.
I feel like you're always ahead of the curve. And
so I had a reasonable working stock of laptops. And so on the Friday, it was almost like, you know, dishing out a pack of cards.
But it was like, it was 56 laptops. So
yes, yeah. We issued probably on the Friday about 70 laptops in one go. We were asking people who had their own laptop to use that. And we've now backfilled those entire people who were using their own laptop with a Centrepoint laptop. So that was sort of, that was the Friday before the first lockdown. It was fun. Or, you know, we had the right technology strategy in place, and it was a technology strategy that was about enabling mobile first and home working. And it wasn't called hybrid at the time, but it's now called hybrid working.
Yeah.
It's just that we had to then just sort of rush a little bit at the end to actually put it into a live situation. And we didn't know what was going to happen on the Monday morning.
No.
But it was fine. We coped. We've managed. Yeah. We're now 18 months in and we're still coping and we're still managing. And we're actually, you know, moving forward and delivering the projects that we had on the roadmap as part of the strategy. And we're actually written a new strategy for the next 5 years, which is now incorporating new ways of working, collaboration, increased collaboration tools. It was a fun time. A fun time. One of the biggest challenges that we had, though, is in our 60 hostels, we found that, you know, during lockdown one and lockdown two, that it was difficult for our young people to be effectively in lockdown. They couldn't access their college work if they were doing college work. There was no real preparation for what would happen for our young people. During lockdown one and lockdown two, I actually purchased and issued a lot of Chromebooks for our young people who were at college and university. Actually managed to obtain SIM cards for those Chromebooks. In fact, I got Chromebooks manufactured with a SIM card slot, which allowed our young people to be able to carry on with their college work. For those people who were having to self-isolate, because if you remember, we had a lot of self-isolation then.
Yeah, we did.
We were issuing laptops for those young people to self-isolate in their rooms at our hostels.
I think that's the thing you don't think about, like the, because technology played such a role there. Like when people, you know, when it's locked down, if people, you know, those young people don't have devices from which to carry out, they're just almost like cut off because with everybody's isolating, all those classes move to online. And if you've not got a device of your own, you're really stuck.
Yep.
And that's absolutely. Technology just played like shifted. And you said before about like, you know, collaboration and that sort of, that, you know, not quite overnight, but doing the whole Teams thing. I think COVID removed a lot of the red tape that was slowing down a lot of those big projects of change.
It was a bit like that conversation I was having with my Chico executive when I first started. I was able to, you know, push forwards on some projects that I had on the back burner and bring them forward. And I'd say back burner was because they were unbudgeted, but, you know, with things that we needed to do, and I was able to bring them forward. There was a phrase I could remember being parried about, was never waste a good pandemic when it comes to project management. And so we were able to actually enable a lot.
I think we should take that one as well with us. Never waste a good pandemic. So it's a great opportunity to get some stuff installed.
Yes, and that's what we did. So moving forward for our young people, we actually moved learning online. So we enabled them with Google Classroom, which was great. So our learning teams, internal learning teams, were able to still work with our young people. We've got a health team, so they do physical and mental health with young people. We actually moved those services online.
Wow.
And actually, our health team is up for a, an innovation award.
That's awesome.
That's fantastic.
For the work that they did. I can't claim that
I was going to say, you were obviously a big part of that. That must be.
I was a small part of it. I mean, physical and mental health is a difficult subject. So, I mean, if I didn't get involved in that stage, but I did actually enable those guys to be able to carry on delivering.
Yeah.
So that was a great thing. But also, you know, one of the things that it's always also been enabled me to do is we never want to get into another situation. We're at the stage now where we might have plan B from the government, which may be or may not be,
yeah,
you know, more restrictions on us. And of course, we've had 3 lockdowns now. I've actually worked on a project where I've enabled our young people to get online. The 60 hostels that we have at Centrepoint, I've actually installed and put in place Wi-Fi in 55 of those sites now. So that was a project that needed to be done, that actually I was able to bring forward and find funding for.
Yeah.
Because it was one of those things where, you know, we could not have our young people digitally disadvantaged. We have young people who are in the gig economy who needed to be able to carry on working. As I said before, we've got young people who are learning, university, their studies all went online. And of course, we've got people who are in self-isolation who just needed to be able to stay in their room without crawling up the wall. So that's been a challenge, but that's a project that I'm proud of that we managed to push forward as part of COVID.
Yeah.
It's brilliant.
So it'd be good to know the top piece of tech that you or Centrepoint use that you rely on quite heavily, or your favourite.
What's your favourite gadget
or
system?
Well, I would say that Microsoft Teams is something that is, at the start of the pandemic, it was Zoom this and Zoom that. And
Zoom seems
to have died off, and I had lots of staff saying, I prefer Zoom. Zoom's, and I think because they used it or started using it in a sort of keeping in touch, doing quizzes or whatever it is with their family, that was sort of their thing. It is a nice piece of video conferencing software, but it actually doesn't necessarily fit in directly with a lot of collaboration that you need to do. So I'd say if the number one tool during the pandemic for Centrepoint has been Microsoft Teams. The other thing would be a laptop.
So simple.
It's very simple. Moving forward, I could probably see the time where we want to remove the barrier of a piece of equipment in front of a Centrepoint member of staff and a young person. So I can see possibly moving forward that we might go into the idea of some sort of tablet.
Yeah.
I think that really is, for us, the thing that we'd like to be able to do is to be able to deliver everything that we need on a tablet. That takes a lot of, what I would say, digitalization of stuff that we do. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we do is very word-centric and not necessarily touchscreen and tablet-centric. So there's a digital transformation. There, I've said it. There's a digital transformation project that needs to be done.
Yeah.
And that's a piece that I'll be working towards.
Mm-hmm.
Hybrid working, I can see that that's the way forward for Centrepoint. Hybrid working works, I think it's different depending on what your role is. We have a lot of business support functions where hybrid working could just mean some time in the office and some time at home and some time working remotely. But for our frontline staff, I can see that hybrid working is more about the idea of spending more time with young people.
Yeah. Brilliant. That's really interesting.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the podcast. If you like what you heard today, please leave a comment and a rating. It really does help the channel. You can find the video podcast on our YouTube channel by searching for Synextra or Experts in Polo Shirts.